Hey, Devin, guess what?
What?
We got some feedback on the podcast. Heard a voicemail the other day. It was tough to make out with the breathing, but I think the guy really liked our show. You should hear this.
Impressive. Most impressive.
Yeah, but did you listen to it today?
No. Was there more?
Yeah, some guy called in and... Here's what he said his dad thought of our show.
He doesn't like you. I don't like you either.
Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. Hey folks, head over to TornbySports.com right now. Some great coverage going on for all of your local teams. A lot of stuff been kicking the fan over there for the rivalry week coming up, BYU versus Utah. But check it out at TornbySports.com. We've got you covered. John, how are you tonight?
I'm good.
Excellent.
I'm plowing my way through the Star Wars movies in anticipation.
It is Star Wars week. And by the time everybody listens to this, there will be just about 24 hours before the first show tips off. But as of right now, what we're speaking, two nights from now, I will have already seen it. And I am just waiting like a child for a Christmas present that he just wants to rip open right now. So you started your marathon this week. How far into it are you?
I'm doing the machete order, so I've watched 4 and then 5 and then 1 and 2. So next I'll watch Revenge of the Sith and then we'll end on Return of the Jedi.
Most excellent. Yeah, Devin, I know you're giving the weird look. You're not sure what the order means that you're talking about. What it is so you have the bookends, the 1 through 6 that you could watch chapter-wise. You have the way it was released, which was 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, or the order John's referring to, the machete order, is, and I'm not sure why they give it that name, but the idea behind it is that you're going to watch it, and the prequels represent flashbacks, if you will. So instead of watching in an order of chapter, you're watching episode 4, Obi-Wan talks about things, and it jumps right into little flashbacks through episodes 1, 2, and 3, and then ends off with the final film.
Oh, okay.
So... It and the machete order, oftentimes, many people will disregard episode 1 altogether in that. I'm not a fan of that. Obviously, John's not doing that. He's watching them all. But yeah, there's a lot of different ways to watch it, but that's one of the more popular ways.
See, I don't think you can leave off episode 1. It has the best Star Wars character ever.
Jar Jar Binks.
Jar Jar Binks.
Don't get John started. He's going to get started, I'm telling you.
Is anyone still listening?
No, I've been watching this entire time assuming that he's a Sith Lord, and it's made him much more bearable. It all makes total sense.
Ever since that article hit Reddit, it has gotten so much burn time, and that subject has, I will agree, for a lot of fans out there, it's probably made watching Jar Jar and the prequels a little more bearable. For me, it's never bothered me. I'm a Jar Jar fan and have been, and I enjoy the prequels and always have. But for those who never really found him very bearable, I got to admit that Reddit article really has people making it a little bit more bearable for them to watch him.
Well, I can tell you watching episode 1 again, you know, watching with the two different mindsets, it's here's Jar Jar again, but then here's also this Sith Lord theory. And Jar Jar, I think one reason that so many people hate him is because he is so incompetent and so pathetic. And he just does random stupid stuff that apparently George Lucas thought was funny. And it does nothing to advance the story. It'll just cut to Jar Jar and he'll just step and poop and go, ooh. And then it cuts to a different scene. And then some creature will fart on him and he'll go, ooh, Pusa. And then it'll cut to some different scene. There's like no point to it. And at no point in the movie is he competent in anything the final battle, they make him a general when he hasn't done a single thing to prove he's worthy of that. And then he only is able to shoot troops by accidentally flicking this broken droid around that's stuck on his ankle.
And it works.
So everything he does is completely by accident. And things just happen to work. But he himself is so pathetic and he never improves at anything that the only explanation is he's got to be a Sith Lord. I mean, why else would a senator entrust her vote to him while she's gone on another planet trying to stay out of danger?
Only to have him go against what her vote
was. Only to have him cast this crucial vote that creates the entire empire. He's got to be a Sith Lord. I'm looking forward to finding out if Snoke himself is actually Jar Jar, or if Jar Jar is just doing something else.
And there you have it.
Should we talk about basketball?
Our Jar Jar talk to begin off will segue from Jar Jar into Gordon Hayward. No.
Speaking of things that aren't very good, let's talk about the Jazz this week.
Well, if we're going to do that, though, we do have to talk about one game where they were very good since we last talked. Good. And then three games where they lost three in a row, but I thought that they were good in two of those three. So let's talk about that New York game for a minute first. John, did you have a chance to watch New York?
Yeah, New York game was great. I watched the whole thing, and it was really over in the first quarter. Jazz completely dominated them. It kind of gave hope because at that point, the Jazz were 2-2 since Rudy went down. And then we knew that Oklahoma City and San Antonio would be tough, but they fought Oklahoma City close twice, both games. They could have won either game. And then the Spurs, they just had nothing. It was like they didn't try the entire game.
The good thing that three of those games gave me hope, three of the four gave me hope on, and it started with New York, was the offense. The Jazz have struggled early on to put offense, put any sort of rhythm to the offensive game. And they've been very good defensively until they lost Rudy. So I was interested, and I said this on the show, was it last week or the week before, where I said, I think it was last week we talked about this, where I said, you know what, the Jazz right now is a critical point in time because without Rudy, they can't be as good defensively, so they're going to have to figure out how to score points. And, they started doing that. And that New York game was an example of where they just went crazy. I mean, they hit threes, they were hitting from everywhere. They seemed to be, offensively, they had a lot of assists. They had a really good game overall. And then even against Oklahoma City Friday night, I thought offensively they played very well. And so I started thinking, man, they might start get their rhythm offensively. And then last night against the Spurs, there wasn't offense. There wasn't anything. And I got to say that I think last night might be just signs of fatigue after playing three games and four nights, having to travel like they did. That was a pretty brutal stretch there. So last night, I almost give a pass just because of you could tell early on that they just their legs weren't there.
Yeah, it completely screwed up all their stats. Gordon Hayward is a minus 42. It was just the beating all the way around, and hopefully it's just one that we can just put behind us and forget about.
There is one person I'd like to begin talking off about this stretch. There's one guy that I thought maybe took a bit of the spotlight, both good and bad, during this stretch, and that's Rodney Hood. That New York game, frustration boiled over. In fact, you could tell from the get-go, shots weren't falling. You could tell he was getting very frustrated, and in the fourth quarter, got a flagrant two, got ejected from the game, which I felt was, I think it was that final breaking point for Rodney. There were some struggles. And then I thought he broke that open against Oklahoma City and started playing really well. What are your thoughts on Rodney to this point?
Well, Sasha Vujacic, how do you say his name? He was just getting on him all night and bugging him, and the Jazz are wasting him. But he finally had enough of that guy and just sent him into the stands, which was kind of surprising for Rodney. I was glad that he wasn't suspended, although maybe he isn't because he went 4 of 12 the next game. But he's one where if they're going to win, they need him to be consistent.
Agreed.
And so that overtime loss against Oklahoma City, he played great. No one looked good against the Spurs, so I guess we can forget that. But overall, his numbers have just not been consistent. His shot looks good. His mechanics look good. It's just that all of his shots are barely missing. So I don't know what's up with that. I don't know if he needs contacts or what's going on. It's like he seems to be doing everything right except having the ball actually go in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, back in that New York game, Vujicic was definitely frustrating him. But again, I felt like that foul on Vujicic was just as much Vujicic's, you know, level of frustration and getting at Hood like he did, as much as it was, I think, a culmination of Hood's frustrations with himself. Because that game, I think, was his worst game of the season. He was 1 for 9 or 1 for 10 in that game? I mean, nothing.
He was two for seven.
2 for 7. He was six for a while there. I mean, nothing was working for him in that game at all. Just watching him and watching his mechanics, you're right, look good. But in that game, his body language, you could tell from very early on that he was just frustrated at how things are not been working in his favor lately. And you can't help but cheer for the guy, but you can definitely tell, I think he's in a slump and he recognizes that and he's not getting out of it very well.
Yeah. He found his shot against Sacramento and he wound up being one of the bright spots of that game. It was still a game the Jazz lost. But I've been kind of going through the numbers and looking at how the Jazz are doing statistically without Rudy. For the season now without Rudy, they're 2-7. And when you don't have Rudy play, like I was just looking at their numbers after the Golden State game, and they're like actually one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA without Rudy. I think it was 24th. So it kind of begs the question. It makes me rethink last year. How much of it was Cantor's bad defense, and how much of it was just the fact that Rudy wasn't playing? That maybe this team isn't as good. Well, I should double caveat that. It's really hard for this team to be a really good defensive team when you don't have Gobert and you don't have Exum. The other guys were part of the team that got the majority of the minutes when they were one of the worst defenses. And it was when Exum and Gobert started that they became one of the best defenses. So when you have your two best defensive players out, suddenly this Jazz team is one of the worst in the NBA.
See,
defensively.
And here is where this begs, where I just, let me play a little bit devil's advocate here. Cause I'm glad you brought Exum into that as a part of the puzzle. But I have a really hard time believing that one single guy takes you from top 10 defensive in the NBA to, when he's injured, bottom 10. I have a hard time grasping that, because if you have a guy that is that valuable on your team that takes you from horrible to elite, that's the league MVP right there. It in my opinion, it has to be, because you've got a guy who makes that much of an imprint on the game. You know, that's where I'm not sure I understand that entirely, because Rudy is extremely valuable, and don't get me wrong, he's not, but how can it be possible that one team goes from elite to completely abysmal defensively with one guy out? How does that happen?
Well, here's their individual numbers since Rudy went out. Derek Favors' defensive rating is 117 in those seven games. Neto is 117. Hood is 113. Ingles is 113. Gordon Hayward is 113. Those are terrible defensive numbers. You know who the best defensive numbers are held by?
Trevor Booker?
No. think hard, you'll probably get it. Not too many minutes.
Not too many minutes?
Withy.
Withy. Withy has the best defensive numbers. He's at 90.2. But, you know, that's over seven games, and that's just like 2 or 3 minutes here and there.
And that was that. Yeah, that's one caveat you have to throw in there, that how does that stretch out if he plays 25 minutes a night? Does he still remain the best defensive player on the team?
I'll tell you how that ends up with him as defensive player of the year.
Withy?
Yeah. Why not?
Wow.
Okay, maybe not. Maybe it balances out, but he's still got to be one of the better defenders for the Jazz.
I've been begging him to just like. I would like to see Withy start.
I would too.
I would love to see Favors and Withy start. On your front court, and just see what happens, because Trey Lyles is getting valuable development time. But he's not helping them win. And, you know, I'm wondering what approach they're really taking to this season. Did they make a decision that when Rudy was going to miss 6 to 8 weeks and Exum's out for the year, are they saying to themselves, well, I guess this is another development year and then we'll really go for it next year? I don't think they can really afford to do that. I mean, I don't want them to do anything drastic, but you could only do that for so long, because every year someone might get injured. And so you can't just go, oh, someone got injured, we'll try again next year.
Well, that, so I'm wondering that kind what of messes with your culture, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you develop a mentality of we're okay losing games. And really, that's the last thing that you need a young team doing, is forming bad habits.
Well, let me go this way, though. I feel like Quinn is still messing around with lineups a little bit. And the reason why I say that, I wondered early on, and we had this conversation a little while back too, and I've had this with somebody else. I felt like Quinn was sticking to a specific lineup and hadn't really changed things up. And I think it was you, John, that mentioned to me the reverse that he had. One thing is, and we might still yet see Withy start. I think Quinn is a man who is patient enough to let a few kinks iron themselves out and see what's going on. And he did. You look at it, and even Kevin Durant said this. I think it was Jody Genesee of the Des News, one of our great guests that we've had on. He wrote an article about, you know, after the game on Sunday night, where Durant gave all the praise in the world, not only to the Jazz, but to Alec Burks and to Quinn Snyder, who made, you know, in his words, made, you know, great team adjustments from Friday night to Sunday night, where Quinn said, all right, I'm going to make an adjustment. I'm going to change it up. We're going to go with Alec Burks in the starting lineup to match up against, you know, a taller guard to match up against Westbrook. And guess what? It worked.
Yeah.
You know, the Jazz went overtime with Oklahoma City and had put themselves in positions to win that game in regulation before they went to overtime. And Alec Burks was a big piece of that puzzle. And Durant made comments of that after the game. I wonder if Quinn is still in that stage right now. And maybe we're going to see Withy, but right now he's trying to play with different lineups and try and see what works best, not only when they're matching up against other teams, but also when you've got guys coming off the bench and you've got to get scoring and you've got to get opportunity. Maybe that's why he's not ready to put Withy in the lineup yet. Thoughts?
I understand everything you're saying, and yet I'm still ready for him to go ahead and start Withy. Because the Jazz have had a problem getting going in the first quarter. They've been blown out in some first quarters. And I just think if you start Withy, you might be able to establish yourself more quickly. And he's okay offensively. I mean, he's as good as Rudy is at getting by the bucket and putting it in if you get it to him. I recognize that we're talking about a second round player who is a was just kind of let go by the Pelicans because they didn't want him as their fifth big. But from what we've seen of him, I think he has shown that he's ready to be given that extra responsibility if the Jazz don't want to fall too far out of the playoffs. I mean, the Jazz right now are out of the playoffs, and they're lucky that the West is down this year because they're only a half game behind the Nuggets for the eighth spot, even though the Jazz are 10 and 13. So I think their goal still has to be playoffs. I think they want to minimize the amount of losses they have so that when Gobert gets back, they can go on a nice run and feel good about themselves and hopefully get up to like the seventh or sixth seed.
Well, and I'll tell you, looking at their next eight games, and this was before last night. So actually take last night's game out of it. Over their next seven games, six of them are at home. I think if I looked at it right. No. It was 8 of 10, including San Antonio. 8 of 10 were at home. So you take the San Antonio game out of it. That removes. So 8 of their next 9 games are at home, and they've got a pretty light schedule going in through the new year. So January 1st, they'll have played, you know, they're in a situation. I just think they can win some games here. You got the Pelicans tomorrow night, or tonight when everybody's listening. And while that's not a gimme, I think that is a game the Jazz should win at home. You've got Denver at home on Friday, and I think the Jazz should win that game. And then you've got it, then next week, I'm trying to remember who it is. Oh, Monday night is Phoenix. That Jazz should win that game too, really. And then from there, so you've got a 3-game homestand, so the Jazz could win 3 in a row, realistically. And then you've got a set of games going through Christmas into New Year's. Jazz could still be over 500 to start the new year.
Yeah, they need to win all three of these home games coming up. They are all winnable games. Nuggets have come on strong lately, and I haven't really looked at that too closely to see why that is. Pelicans are still a mess. They should be able to beat them. Denver, it's at home. And I still believe in the Jazz playing Denver. Phoenix might be in some flux because there's been a lot of trade talks lately around them. Markieff Morris might be gone.
Right.
But they're still struggling, so they should win those. And then they'd be at 13-13. And then we'd all feel good again.
Yes.
Road game against the Warriors, I'm just going to assume that's a loss.
Right.
Home game against the Clippers. Jazz beat Clippers before.
And they were close to beating them. They were close to beating them in LA. Granted, you had Rudy at that time, but.
Well, they beat him.
That's right. They did beat him. Sorry, my bad.
They beat him in LA. I think they've only played once so far.
Yeah, that was my bad. They did win that game. Yes.
So this will be a home game. Clippers are going to want some revenge. They're going to want to get it with Rudy out. That should be a really competitive game, however that goes. Let's assume they lose that since the Clippers seem to have gotten their act together and they're playing pretty well.
So they drop two games back under.
Now you're 13-15. Then you play the Sixers, so that gets you to 14-15. Your last two games are Minnesota and Portland. You could win both of those.
Should win both of those. Should.
Should. Road game in Minnesota. Minnesota has a lot of young talent. We don't have Rudy. That'll be close.
Yes.
Should beat Portland, though.
So if you win both of those.
Ideally, they'll still be over 500. Realistically, I'm guessing they're going to end the year at 15-16. And we can feel really good about that. And, you know, how far away is Rudy from there after that? I don't know. But there's some tough games right there in January where it would be really nice to have Rudy.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
You know, this should have been a month where we should have been able to make more hay. I think if we had had Rudy, we would have beat Orlando. There would have been some other ones we could win.
But see, I felt like that Orlando game was winnable without Rudy as well. The fact is, there's a couple of games they should have won with or without Rudy. I thought the Orlando game was winnable without Rudy. And I thought they should have beat Sacramento. That's two games right there they should have won. Because that Orlando game, I still put on the Jazz's turnovers in that game. They had 19. and four of them at the end of the third quarter stretch where they didn't need him. So, again, two games the Jazz should have won without Rudy.
Yeah.
So, no, yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from. And, yeah, there is some concern. I don't know where the mindset of the organization is right now. I would like to think they still want to win. I would like to see – I would like to think that they're still looking at that. But I also thought that win or lose this year, I felt like this was a developmental year for a lot of the youngsters anyway. And I think the Jazz were hoping that they would win while developing. Unfortunately, that's not happening right now.
Yep. I have a lot more I had planned on talking about, but I actually have to go. My daughter apparently is stuck without a ride and I have to go get her.
Oh, all right then.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. Wait, I would tell you to just take it mobile. We'll talk to you on the phone while you're mobile, but now that just won't work.
you two can keep talking, but I got to go.
All right. Well,
see you guys.
We'll catch you next week. Later. All right. So, you know, we can keep going for a minute, but I like to think that John was onto something there, but I still feel like the Jazz are developing while trying to win, and they didn't win. I still think they're a playoff team this year. I think injuries are a setback, but I also don't think there's going to be a lot of trades this year, and not for the Jazz organization. I think they're going to stand pat, and I think that fans are going to have a hard time with that, but I think that people need to understand the bigger picture here, and I think right now development is the bigger picture.
Well, I think when you look at it, you can make a trade right now, and yes, you can better the team, perhaps, and help with a run this year, but who are you really going to replace? Because Exum's going to come back, and he's going to be your starter next year. There's no question. Rudy is going to get healthy, no question. You know, they're in a slump right now, but really would we even be having this conversation if the Jazz had beat Sacramento and if they had pulled out one of those two games against Oklahoma City, which was very possible
right
by the way they played.
No, and I agree with that. And my thing about the trading is I feel like the Jazz didn't make any major moves in the offseason. They didn't make any free agent moves. They brought back a healthy Alec Burks, and they drafted Trey Lyles. To me, that made a statement right there that they're set to go forward with this group, win or lose, and they want to develop this young group. And the Dante Exum injury set them back, but I think you're onto something there. I think if they were going to make a trade, it's not – the idea behind trades, you can't get trigger happy just to win now because you're desperate for wins and you're desperate to make the playoff, because I think that hurts your team long term. I think right now they have to stay on course with what their plans are, with or without injury. I think if they had Exum and if they had Gobert, would they be in a different situation right now? Absolutely they would, but they're not. And you can't make quick draw moves, pull the trigger, get trigger happy to make moves just because you're in dire circumstances. That's what Philadelphia teams do. That's what, you know, that's what the bad teams in the NBA do. The Jazz aren't that bad.
Well, you have to ask yourself, what would the Jazz bring in? You know, who are they going to be looking at? Because are you going to make a trade for a big man when Rudy's going to be healthy here in a few weeks? I don't think so.
And
would you make one maybe to upgrade the power forward backup like we've talked about before?
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that maybe happening.
Would you make a trade to upgrade your backup point guard? At what cost? I mean, right now you don't have Dante Exum, and Trey Burke is having his best year of his career right now. You got to give the guy a chance to continue to shine right now.
Right. Or would the Jazz go and say, you know what, Trey's having a good year. Maybe we trade him for a veteran point guard that we feel can be consistent down the stretch and can be a mentor to Dante, and we'll be okay coming off the bench. Maybe they look at a situation like that. But like you said, Trey's playing great. I don't see them moving him when he's been the best point guard that the Jazz have right now.
And then you go across the board. Hayward, I think we've all discussed, is untouchable. Derek Favors is untouchable, and Derek Favors is having his best year. I mean, he's making leaps and bounds and improvements. He's getting there as a power forward. And Hayward's commanded attention early on, but he seems to be coming on just fine. You know, why would you? And the other thing is, why would you trade Alec Burks right now, who also you've just invested your money in last year? He sat out almost an entire year with injury. Now he's back and wants to prove that he can fit into the schemes that Quinn's got rolling in. So far, it's worked out well. He's playing well. So, no, I think to both our point right now, I don't think the Jazz are interested in making any blockbuster moves to bring in any upgrades at any of their starter positions or their first six or eight positions. I think they do it as a backup, to bring in backup guys that might improve.
Well, you just have to look at the roster. Like we said, Exum, Trey is unlikely to be moved. Alec, unlikely to be moved. Hood is a sophomore in the NBA. He has struggled. We have talked about this for the past few weeks. But he has a lot of talent and could still be the steal of that draft. You look at Hayward, like we said, not going anywhere. Coach has been talking a lot about Trevor Booker. And I really believe him when he talks about how high he is on Trevor Booker and being a veteran for this team and bringing the hustle and the energy and being aggressive on the court. I can't see the Jazz really wanting to move him.
I think basically what you've done is you've just pretty much gone down the list and pointed to the fact that Jazz are not likely to make a move. And that's
who do you want to move?
Right,
though?
Right. No, I agree. And I think that's going to frustrate a lot of Jazz fans who expect moves. But maybe we put this out to the listener. Who are you going to move? And why would you move them? Why would you risk development for some of these guys and move them when you haven't had an opportunity to see the chemistry of what this team can bring? There hasn't been opportunity for this team to mold chemistry-wise. There just hasn't.
Well, and the thing people have to remember is be realistic, because you're not going to go out and trade Withy for a Darren Collison. You know, you're not going to go out and get a Taj Gibson in exchange for Tibor Pleiss and Neto. It's just not going to happen. So you'd have to be willing to give something up. And I don't see the Jazz. I don't see Dennis. I don't see Quinn. I don't see anyone really in the organization saying, yeah, I want to move this guy, because the Jazz have something good. It's been a rough road this year, but they have a lot of talent and they've grown as a team. One thing that you have to remember is last year after the trade with Cantor, you really saw the team unite, especially when they played Oklahoma City. Do you remember that?
Yep, sure do.
And you have that chemistry in the locker room. And while they may not be getting all the wins that everyone wants right now, they are competing in every game except for when they play the Spurs.
Yeah, and Oklahoma City that one game too.
Yeah, and Oklahoma City. I mean, most of the games the Jazz have played, they've been in it.
And by the way, you just mentioned two teams that are championship contending teams this year.
Right.
I wonder if there's something to be said about that. Granted, the Jazz played Golden State very well, but, you know, that was one night. I just think, I don't know. Let's not forget that the Spurs are just really, really good. And I still think the Spurs are a team that could give Golden State a run for their money in the playoffs. So, you know, you're looking at different opponents here. Yeah. I thought that the Jazz's best games of the year to this point might be those two Oklahoma City games.
They could be.
Because, you know, granted that New York game, they put out an offensive performance that was amazing, but without Rudy Gobert in the lineup, the Jazz played Oklahoma City down to the tooth and nail. Both games on the road Friday at home Friday and on the road on Sunday, both games were competitive down to the final seconds, and the Jazz lost single digits in both games. That says something to me about the competing level of the team. And I'm a believer that the Jazz let it ride right now. When Rudy comes back, you let it ride for a little while longer and see if they can gel and get it back on track. And if they do, I don't understand the knee-jerk moves yet. I just don't. I don't know if we're ready for that yet.
Well, you have to think about, I didn't watch the game on Friday, I'll admit that. I did watch the majority of the game on Sunday. The Jazz really lost that game at the start of the second half. because they had the big lead, and within 2 minutes, Oklahoma City was either right there with them or they were ahead. I can't remember where the score was at the 10-minute mark. But after that, you know, Oklahoma City started to pull away from the Jazz, you thought, and they hung around. I mean, they made a game out of it. They pushed that game to the wire on the road in arguably one of the most challenging arenas, I would guess. Because those OKC fans, they are vicious. So, yeah, I mean, it's a loss. It's going to show up as a loss. And at the end of the season, we're not going to be going, well, they were close back in December. No. We're just going to look at the wins and losses and say, where are they at? You know, are they in the playoffs? You know, are they above 500? Where are the Jazz?
Well, I'm hoping there will be a pivotal game. Last year's pivotal game. Jazz had a couple different ones, but I felt like one of the pivotal turnaround points for them in the season was the Memphis game, December 22nd last year. They won that game on the road in Memphis, and from that point on, they went on a tear. Granted, January was still rough for them, but then in January, we saw Dante Exum take the starting role. You saw Gobert take the starting role 2 weeks later. But from that Memphis game on, and I'd have to go back and look at the numbers, but early on the season last year, they had a losing record. From the Memphis game on, they were over 500, and they went on a tear. I'm looking for that pivotal game this year. I'm not sure we've hit it yet, but I there's got to be that pivotal game yet to come this year.
Well, like we were talking about just a few minutes ago with the record, the Jazz can be right there at 500 this week. It is possible. If they can hold right around the 500 mark until Rudy gets back, it is very possible we could see the team rally at the end of the year, much like they did last year. Because early in the year, you have to remember, you had pieces that were still trying to fit together. Alec Burks was still trying to fit into the system. Neto was starting. Granted, he wasn't seeing starter minutes, but he was starting. And so you've got these key positions, key players that weren't comfortable in the system. I say let's get Rudy healthy, get to January, and let's see what we have. If we end up missing the playoffs, what are you going to do about it? You know, it happens. But with the healthy Gobert, the Jazz really should be able to rally, get into the playoff mix, and, you know, probably get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, but that's fine. Let's at least build the culture of winning and, you know, get that hunger going even more of, okay, we've got a taste. Let's see what we can do next year. And at that time, go ahead and explore any trade you want in the off season. Look at anyone you can sign, because if you want to make a move, if you want to trade one of those guys we talked about, you know, a Burks, a Hood, I believe Booker's only under a contract for this year. But if the Jazz want to make a move then, fine, but don't make one now just because it's going to help you for the next couple months.
I think we're in agreement there. Anybody out there listening, if you got a take on this or thought on this, holler at myself and Devin, at Torn by Devin, at Jedi Zog on Twitter. Let's have a talk about it, because I'd like to hear everybody else's thoughts on it. I know there's a lot of you out there that want to see some changes right away. But I want to hear some of your thoughts and why you think that things need to happen and who you think needs to happen. So, get at us. I know John wanted to talk tonight about, all-star voting. I'm not sure what he had in mind, but I'm just going to take a second and mention everybody. Hey, take a minute and, throw your all-star votes in. Jazz players eligible for that. Some obvious players that stick out in my mind. Derek Favors having an all-star year. Should be under consideration for the All-Star game. Should. And I'd like to see, you know, I think we'd all like to see that. So put your votes out there for him. And also Gordon Hayward. And I'm trying to think of who else is going on that ballot. But, yeah, let's get some support out there for these players and get them out there for the All-Star game. So, like I said, Derek Favors probably deserves it as much as anybody. Unfortunately, there's Western Conference is stacked with power forwards right now. And there's some guys ahead of him that are likely to get the nod before he will.
Yeah, but you never know what could happen when it comes down to the coach's decision of who to bring in. You know, they may look at Favors, whose player efficiency rating, I believe, is up there with Malone as one of the only players to average, is it above a 25 PER?
That I'm not for sure.
I could be pulling that stat out of nowhere, but I believe I saw that. This is why John's on the show. You know, we need someone.
Yeah, John's our stats guy.
Knows what they're talking about. But Favors certainly deserves consideration from the coaches and from the Jazz. He is hands down the most deserving player. Hayward struggled a little bit, but Derek has been very consistent, I would say, throughout the season.
And Fuego
Favors.
He's on fire. He's just been on fire this year. He's having a hell of a year. He really has. So,
and can you imagine he could still be going up?
Yeah, right. Where's this guy's ceiling at? I don't know. We're seeing him making some leaps this year. I mean, is his ceiling even higher? It could very well be making leaps like he did this year. He could go higher.
I was having a conversation with family member last season about Favors, and this person was saying, "Oh, I'm not that big on him. You know, he's good, but he's not that great." And I had to pose the question again this year, how do you feel about Favors? And it was, yeah, he's doing really good. I really like him now. And it's just, you're seeing that growth. He's, God, how old is he now? Is he 23?
I think he's 24, but yeah. He's
but
right there.
Still?
Right. Right. So, all right. I think we've killed a lot of segments tonight. Kind of odd when we don't have our partner in crime. Any quick hits you had ideas for this week?
No. Don't play the Spurs.
Don't play the Spurs.
Don't play the Spurs this week.
All right. Well, I don't know if there's much more to talk about. My mind's jello this week anyway for, you know, obvious reasons. Yes, everybody, obvious reasons. So
Alan and his Star Wars.
I think it's a good place to wind down this week. Hey, folks, you can find us on Facebook, Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. Find us on Stitcher and iTunes, Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. Leave reviews on iTunes. Yes, if I have to resort to begging, I will. If I have to go down State Street wearing a Jedi and Germs t-shirt, dancing like some of those guys do, holding the pizza signs and all that, I'll start holding up a sign. Just, yeah, do us a favor, guys, and go out and leave us a review on iTunes. It would be much appreciated. It would be very helpful. We do appreciate those who do interact with us and listen to us. We have listeners all over the world. Thank you. Thank you for chiming in with us. Thank you for listening to us. And thank you for giving us feedback as well. We appreciate it. If you don't have enough in 140 characters on Facebook, you can also drop us an email, jedizog@gmail.com. We'll read it on the air. We'll talk about it. You can find each one of us individually. Our wonderful co-host, John, is at Germs Guy. You got Devin at Torn by Devin, and then you got myself at JediZog. And the show is at Jedi and Germs. Not run by me. Folks, it's not me. Just so you know, it's not. So, as always, thank you again. If we don't talk to you, we won't talk to you till after Star Wars, so may the Force be with you. And Devin, you get to take us out tonight.
Goodbye, everybody.
No, that is John's. Really?
Oh. Peace.